Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Melody Cederstrom, who will be back in just a moment. She had to step away from the microphone. Our guest today is Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs, and she'll be joining us shortly. We're going to bring you some opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events, and Melody's back already. All right, Melody, now you can do the market report.
Well, maybe I can and maybe I can't. Let's go ahead and we'll see what we can do. And there's a reason.
It's good that there's a reason.
There's a reason, but it's not one I want to advertise on the radio. It's called something about getting those extra eyes, finding those extra eyes.
You misplaced your glasses?
I had them.
You have your glasses.
I found them. Gold. Had a great day today. Yes, it's only up $1.40, but there was a lot of pressure on gold early this morning. So we're looking at gold up $1.40 today at $1,250. You have silver up 9 cents today. And my screen just went bye-bye.
Would you like me to continue?
No, I got it here. Silver is $1,849 up 9. Platinum was down 9. Yeah, tell me these markets aren't rigged. The platinum is down 9 at 1,018, and palladium was up 9 at 782. So silver up 9 cents, platinum down $9, and palladium up $9.
Somebody stole the numerals off somebody's computer. That's all it is, Melody. It's not a plot. It's not a conspiracy, Melody. It's just a defective keyboard.
Really? Yeah. USDX today was higher 0.34 at 101.71. And you have crude oil down 24 at 53.77. And I know everyone is aware of the paper markets, although they are off their highs of the day. But we still had the Dow up 300 points, 302, up almost 1.5% on the day, 21,114. The NASDAQ up the same, up 78 points at 59.04. And the S&P was up 32 at 23.95. 10-year yield was up 0.11 at 2.46, and the euro was down, of course, 0.23 at 106. So considering the Dow was up as much as it was, and gold was down, had a low of 1236 on the day, for it to show a return of $1.40, not a bad day for gold considering the amount of pressure. Silver hung in there most of the day. We had a low of 1814 and a high of 1854 and settling in at 1849. So both gold and silver, the precious metals, are, I think, doing a good show. Perhaps tomorrow will be the day that will show us if they're really able to hold this or if the paper market pressure is just a little too strong. But still a nice showing. And personally, I believe there's just too much talk of inflation. I just don't think you're going to see gold reverse at this point in time. So we might see a little pullback here and there, but anything drastic? Nope, I think it's done. So I think the lows of the gold have been done. So 1-800-375-4188. We have Wendy Wilson joining us as she does each and every Wednesday. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Oh, good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about some power and some of the plants that we tend to nibble on, because plants have these chemical components. We call them phytochemicals or photochemicals, also known as flavonoids. So we eat them when we eat foods and herbs, and these nutrients have benefits. They're tremendous. Now, one particular flavonoid that's been identified by scientific medicine is baocolin, and it has some powerful benefits. It works like an anti-inflammatory. It also has anti-cancer properties. It protects the brain. It has antimicrobial action as well as cardiovascular protection. So I thought we'd check out some of the foods and herbs that can power us up with this baecolin. So it's a flavonoid.
How do you spell baecolin?
It's B-A-I. C-A-L-E-I-N, but it's pronounced baecolin. And it's taken from roots and leaves of your foods and herbs, and it helps regulate signals on a cellular level. So people say, well, why is that important? Well, it has the power to modify proteins and enzymes called kinase cascade, and these changes in proteins can offer functional changes. So scientific medicine has been trying to study Bayi-Kolin in the plants for several decades, and what they've learned is it has a lot of potential to reverse and even prevent disease. And of course, you know they want to make a drug out of that. So the U.S. National Library of Medicine and the National Institutes of Health have published a study in December 2012, and what they stated was Bayi-Kolin phytochemical, they said, quote, an intriguing therapeutic phytochemical this is for destroying cancer. Did you hear about that in the news?
Nope.
Okay. So for certain foods and herbs that have these flavonoids in them, they offer people an option to the standard medical cancer treatments of chemo and surgery. So in the report, they stated the plants with Bayi-Kolin show, quote, potent activity against pancreatic cancer. And, you know, when people get pancreatic cancer, they're usually not with us within 6 months. So the report also said that these flavonoids are very effective towards glaucoma, cardiovascular disease, liver diseases, diabetes, and several other internal medical disorders. So you're going to find high concentrations of Bayi-Kolin flavonoid in your organically grown fruits and vegetables, but it's also in green tea, dark chocolate, and some herbs. And I thought we'd go over the herbs because the herbs are going to have a higher potency of this flavonoid. So here's a list of the herbs: skullcap, milk thistle, dandelion, hawthorn berry, and plantain leaf. So if you want, we can go over some of the highlights of each of those if we have time.
Well, we have time. Just
roll with it. Okay. Yeah. Well, skullcap's very interesting. There's different varieties, but I'm talking about the American species. So it's been typically used for nervous system issues down through the centuries. Now, the common name skullcap was due to the shape of the flower. It kind of looks like a cap that you wear on your head, therefore skullcap. So other names for it were mad dog or mad weed, because they also used it to cure canines from rabies. Isn't that cool?
That's pretty bizarre. That's pretty strange, all right.
I know. So here are some of the other conditions they use skullcap for down through the centuries: cholera, convulsions, tetanus, tremors, delirium, insomnia, hysteria, neuralgia, which is nerve numbness and tingling, Parkinson's, skin nerve sensitivity, diuretics, and laxatives. So it has a lot of nervine action in it, apparently, because they were using it for these conditions. Now, milk thistle, one of my favorite herbs, very common name. It gets its name from the milky substance the plant emits. So if you grow it in your garden, so Al, if you're going to plant some milk thistle, get ready. It's going to grow 10 feet tall. And it's indigenous to the Middle East, but it's cultivated everywhere in the world. Now, the flavonoids in this plant, pretty substantial. One in particular is called silymarin. You may have heard of it. It's scientifically known to assist the liver to prevent damage to the liver cells and reverse disease. So milk thistle is an antioxidant, and it will inhibit the enzymes that lend themselves to invite metabolic cell damage of the liver cells. So it's a free radical inhibitor, if you will. So it's been used over the centuries for things like cirrhosis, chronic hepatitis, fatty liver, inflammatory skin conditions, and jaundice. But, you know, if you go to Europe, milk thistle is in every pharmacy, and it's dispensed for all kinds of diseases to prevent and even treat disease, and it has no side effects, so you can use it for long periods of time. Some of the scientific studies on milk thistle compare to it has more antioxidants than vitamin E, which is really interesting. Now, in November 2007, researchers at the University of California in Irvine, they discovered the protective benefits within milk thistle for the treatment of hepatology-type diseases, liver disease. And Dr. Keiku Hu and his colleagues published their findings in the World Journal of Gastroenterology. about milk thistle and its ability to fight liver cancer. This is what they said in the report. It reduced cancer cell production and spreading. It encouraged cancer cell suicide. And it altered the structure of the cancer cell to prohibit replication. Well, that's just really powerful stuff.
I agree.
All right,
pretty amazing, really.
Yeah.
And how much research is going into this? Is anybody doing intensive research on this, or is this just being forgotten because it can't be patented?
I think they're running into the problem. They can't just, you know, take the chemistry in the plant in its entirety. And when you isolate, like, if you isolate the flavonoids like this, then you run into the problem. There's the buffer alkaloids are not there. And this is where you get side effects, really, in pharmaceutical drugs, is because the body is struggling to use it without the buffer alkaloids and the other minerals to help it use it properly.
Then you're saying you have to take this in a natural form.
I would.
In order to get all of it, because it's not just the bay colon,
right,
for example, that's protecting you. There are other chemicals associated with that in the plant that actually enhance its ability to protect
metabolize it. Right, absolutely. Well, you know, we were talking about some of these herbs to help protect you from cancer. Well, so dandelion root's also on this list. And last couple of years, dandelion's been in the spotlight because of the 2012 Windsor University Medical Hospital report from Quebec, Canada, where they discovered that dandelion has cancer-fighting power, and they discovered it by accident. Their research is online. You can go look at it there. But what it does is it makes the cancer cell commit suicide. That's what dandelion root does, but it doesn't harm healthy cells. But dandelion's a member of the sunflower family. It's indigenous to Western Europe and the Mediterranean. And the records of dandelion's medicinal use were revealed in the 10th century when there was writings from Arabian doctors from the Middle East. And so they wrote about the plant being a remedy for a lot of disorders. Now, the common name for this plant, dandelion, comes from the French because they thought the leaf looked like a lion's tooth, dandelion, so dandelion. So the ancients would use dandelion for the following purposes: as a laxative, a diuretic, liver disorders, spleen disorders, heartburn, rheumatism, gout, and eczema. So it tends to absorb a lot of toxins and protects you from that. So if you're trying to balance gut floras, it helps with that. It reduces inflammation, and especially in the bowel. And it soothes while it removes toxins and irritants. So that's one of the unique qualities of the dandelion. I like that. Hawthorn is next. You've heard about hawthorn. American settlers would put it in their marmalades and jellies. But hawthorn berries have been an herbalist favorite for heart tonics. So hawthorn's greatness, we read about it from 90 AD in the writings of the Greek physician Dioscorides. And he said hawthorn berry bushes were also lining the Mount of Olives in Jerusalem. So centuries of use. It's good for blood pressure problems, rapid heartbeat, arrhythmias, angina, arteriosclerosis, and rheumatism. And the Center for Advanced Health in 2008 had a study showing hawthorn works like a vasodilator and performs better than the prescription drugs like Coumadin, your rat poison.
Yeah. So it's better to take hawthorn than rat poison. That's what you're telling us. Is that right?
That's what the science is saying. Mm-hmm. And I tend to agree with that part.
Don't want to take that rat poison.
Right. Well, hawthorn comes, the flavonoids, and it dilate your blood vessels, your coronary arteries. It reduces blood pressure and strain on the heart muscle, and also, you know, helps you prevent having clots and strokes. So it helps protect that fibrinogen protein there. So that's good too. Lastly is the plantain. It seems to be in the same boat as the dandelion with regards to people thinking it's an unwanted weed in the yard and they spray it with Roundup. But plantain has a long history. You could use it inside and outside of the body. Native American Indians taught the settlers how to use plantain externally for poisonous rashes and bites. And it's also been used inside to soothe the digestive tract and to stimulate immune system. So it's been used for snake bites, poison ivy. It's used for diarrhea, dysentery, inflammatory bowel disorders, hemorrhoids, cancer of the colon and breast cancer, and thrush, which is a yeasty rash. So it looks like the ancients knew a little bit about these plants. They didn't know about the flavonoids in the plants, but they knew what plants helped with certain conditions. So we have thousands of years of empirical history, trial and error, which are, you know, the stuff that works is passed down. So it's the world's biggest, longest clinical trial on these plants.
That's a good observation.
Yeah. So today, science is discovering the chemistry behind the plant's benefits in hopes to make a drug. And here's a case in point. In May 2015, English and the UK scientists, in desperation to fight hospital superbugs, went to the ancient archives, the medieval archives, to dig up antibacterial recipes. I'm not kidding. They found a 1,000-year-old Viking potion that was translated into English. The text guaranteed that the concoction would vanquish what ails you. And after going on the equivalent of a scavenger hunt to gather the ingredients and the tools, they made the concoction. And according to the medical staff, they had no idea that this potion, how it worked, but it worked like an antibiotic. And this is what they said: when we tested the potion, it showed positive against MRSA, and we were just blown away.
They haven't been able to find anything to deal with MRSA in the chemical lab. Is that true?
Right. So they had to go to medieval texts, which, you know, cracks.
It's got to be humbling to some degree, isn't it?
Oh, I tell you, God's got to be laughing.
Yeah, I imagine.
Yeah, so, you know, we're more powerful than we think. And, you know, if God says herbs are here for the service of man, for the creation, for, you know, to heal the sick, I think he can't lie about stuff like that. He doesn't lie. So medicinal herbs, we're instructed by God to tap into them and use them. So I think people who are listening and observing, they're doing just that. And they're just seeing how healthy and powerful they are when they do that.
Should we be taking these herbs as a preventative, or should we only be taking them as a remedy? Do we wear our ability to respond to them out a little bit if we take it all the time, or should we, you know, just save it for emergencies, essentially?
Yes, you can use herbs as prevention and for reversing problems, and there are some herbs you just want to use when you're sick and then not use them every day, like a multivitamin, and we educate people how to do that. That's one of our things at Apothecary Herbs. We just don't sell you tools. We show you everything on how to use that and be successful at it, how to store them and everything else. So basically cleanse and nourish. You get the toxins out, you put the nutrition in, you boost the immune system, you use these herbs with these flavonoids, and you got most internal medicine issues beat. You do. It's simple. I know it's not new stuff, but it works.
Well, we've got 30 seconds left. Actually, we have about 20, so I guess you better just give us some contact information. I had a couple more questions, but we'll have to save them for another day.
Well, sure. Call the folks at Apothecary Herbs. They'll talk to you about the cleanse and nourish routine. You can benefit. 866-229-3663. You'll get a free catalog. 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com. Thanks. See you next time.
Thank you, Wendy. Look forward to it. It's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
And again, I just wanted to go over the prices for gold and silver today. We have gold up 140 at 1250.20, and silver was up 9 cents today at 1849. So a great showing for gold and silver today, with the stock market going over 21,000, being up over 300 points. And it's interesting when you look at these high numbers. I mean, everyone remembers the dot-com bubble. Everybody with the green spans or irrational exuberance. You can go back all the way to 1987. And bullishness has never been this high. You go through three different bull markets, a couple of crashes, the great moderation of the 1990s, and all sorts of other types of history-making events. But bullishness has never been this high. Bullishness is at 63.1% of market professionals responding to the latest Investors Intelligence Survey. That's the highest level since the year of the infamous Black Monday, which was October 19th, 1987. That crash that sent the U.S. markets down, 23% in a day? Yep. So in the Investors Intelligence Survey, a reading above 55% typically would warn people, hey, you better take some profits, but not today. Investors don't seem to be in any type of hurry to sell, and particularly since this administration is just getting started. But one of the biggest looming shadows over the market right now is valuation. If you use the Robert Shiller adjusted PE comparison, which weighs price against earnings of the past 10 years, stocks are trading at highs seen only twice before. Around the onset of the 2000 bear market and, of course, the 1929 market crash. And we all know what happened there that led to the Great Depression. And what's interesting is most of your brokers say in a short term, I'm not worried. You don't want to sell. You want to stay in there. But the only time we've ever come this close again to was 2007. And every time we've been at or above the current level, we've seen a significant market pullback. So all the signs are telling us there, folks. So how long do you want to gamble? Do you want to gamble till it goes to 22,000? Do you want to gamble till it goes to 24 or 25 in hopes that it doesn't crash and drop 25% or 30%? So in times of elevated sentiment in either direction, like the bull market days leading up to the collapse of 2008 or the panic in early 2009, you still have to make decisions and base it on where do you think or what is going to happen in the relative term, in the relative short period of time. So,
what you're looking at here is evidence of the contrarian notion about how you invest. You buy low and you sell high. You buy when things, nobody wants them and everybody's negative, that's the time to buy, assuming you've got good fundamentals to begin with. And you sell, if you're going to sell high, you're going to sell when everybody is buying. All right? You're going to sell when consumer confidence is at an extraordinary high. And that's exactly the time most people refuse to sell, and therefore they get clipped. And when we have something like Black Monday from 1987, it lost 23% in a day. That contrarian philosophy, just look, it's as positive as it's likely to ever be. That means it's time to go. Party's over.
And there's
that's
no
the implication. We'll watch and see, but that's the implication.
And you said the key word, fundamentals. And when we talk about all these signs, it shows us and it tells us these aren't the fundamentals to keep the stock market positioned at these highs. Because if I thought it was going higher, well, you know, you'd want to be in there if the fundamentals were telling you to. But there aren't any fundamentals underneath it. There's only, for the Dow to go up 1,000 points, there's only three stocks. A third of the entire gain was based on three shares.
Three stocks.
So well, I'll let you guess who they are. Goldman Sachs? Any wonder there? Boeing? Any wonder there? Apple? Any wonder there? So whether it's politics as usual, business as usual, it's just interesting that you see, you know, the stocks that are making the biggest moves, and, you know, just puts a little question mark under the whole thing. But, you know, we talked about inflation earlier. We're going to talk a little bit about the speech last night. But we talk about inflation, German inflation. They're beginning to see their level at the highest in 4.5 years. And it's bounding past the European Central Bank's Eurozone target. Manufacturing was also reported as growing at the strongest rate since 2011. And so you see, or you think, that Germany is firing on all cylinders. Well, I'm not so sure the rest of the European Union is, but maybe Germany is. So again, this is inflation data. Again, is they have an extreme loose monetary policy. And it certainly is a red flag. And just... So again, inflation is creeping in many of these countries around the world. So don't expect prices to go down anytime soon.
Well, you know, more interesting times. Did you want to talk about Trump's speech?
Did you watch it?
No. Well, yeah, I watched. I didn't watch it live. I watched it later on. I watched the recording. I was doing another radio program at the time Trump was speaking, and they were going to preempt Trump because of my radio program, but they decided, oh, what the heck. They gave him a break.
But it was interesting. I think he did a great job.
I think it was a little surprising. I would have expected a certain amount of bombast and hysteria, and he stayed calm throughout the whole thing. He was on point, and he delivered his speech point by point by point by point. I'm not sure how much he's going to be able to accomplish. I mean, it basically all sounds good. There's some things I have some concerns about.
I think his delivery, as you mentioned, was good, but I believe it was just a calmer inauguration speech. It was very similar in content throughout the various points, as you mentioned. He was on target, but it was really the same, I believe, a lot. Maybe not. It wasn't identical. I'm not saying that, but it was very much the same. And his delivery was very good, and I didn't think it would be. I didn't think it would be as boisterous as many of his pep rallies and so forth, but I thought he did a great job. There's been a lot of questions of whether he was using the tongue. I mean, people just focus in on the silliest things. I mean, people want to know if he was using a teleprompter or not. It's like, what difference does it matter? That means you're only listening to, you know. I don't know. It's just, there were some interesting points, but I didn't really come away with anything new.
Well, he seemed to have something for everyone. Was one of the things that I thought. He's got something for the Latinos. He's got something for the blacks. He's got something for the army. Something for the police department. Something for businessmen. Something jobs for the public. He had something for everybody. But the question is going to be, can he deliver? And it won't be as you can't. Even though he's president, he can't just make a wish list and tell Santa Claus, "Here's what I want," and you better, if you know what's good for you, deliver it. Wanting it and getting it are two different things, and he's just beginning to get to the point where, you know, getting it is becoming a real... wanting it, yeah, we've done that kind of, but now let's see if he can get it. And he'll get some of it, I don't doubt, but for example, I mean, one of the things he's going to get, he's talked about, we're going to, for every new regulation coming out of the bureaucracy, two old regulations have to be eliminated. That's going to be a show. Do you realize if it means that for every new law, essentially, now it's regulations we're talking about, but for every new regulation are going to cancel too. What if you knew what those two regulations were going to be every time, if you had advance notice of what regulations were going to be terminated? I mean, there'd be a great money-making opportunity there in a lot of instances. You know, all of a sudden, you know that this particular, that these two regulations that are governing who knows what, the exhaust off automobiles. If you know two regulations, they're putting a new law in there, okay, that's maybe a problem, maybe good, maybe bad, but they're going to eliminate two regulations that have been here for the last 20, 40, 100 years. I don't know how long, but they're going to eliminate two of those. If you knew what those were in advance, you could make a fortune. You'd know that some industries, it wouldn't happen in every instance. But if you could know what these two are going to go, right? If you understood that properly, it seems to me that you could make a small fortune short term in the stock market. You'd know that this stock was going to go up, this stock was going to go down.
Well, I think we saw that with the private prisons. Knowing that, you know, that was going to be part of the, you know, campaign promises. And we saw, you know, that executive order to include and increase the private prisons, and their stocks have gone up 100% plus.
Yeah,
so
that's the principle I'm talking about. So this is, you know, and there will be unintended consequences. It's very easy to say we're going to just delete two regulations for everyone. I'm in favor of it. I'm not being critical. I'm in favor. I want to see the bureaucracy's size and power and scope of influence. I want to see it diminished because I don't believe it's really helping us on a national basis. But just the same, there will be unintended consequences, and they're gonna cancel some regulations that are going to make people scream. It's bound to happen. There's going to be something that is, we messed up. And Trump will get a lot of criticism out of it. The bureaucracy will get a lot of criticism out of it. It's like canceling Obamacare. Trump has come out and said, who knew that it could be so complex? Well, all of this is going to be complex, including the two old regulations that have to be eliminated for every new regulation that's added. I think what will actually happen here, I don't know how many old regulations are going to be eliminated, but the fact that they have to, the apparent fact that they have to eliminate two for every one they pass, it pretty much indicates there aren't going to be any new regulations. It's going to be difficult. It's not going to be business as usual.
Which means there won't be any eliminated.
Well, there may not. Rather than eliminate them, they won't make any new ones. Well, that's probably a gain.
But they won't be eliminated. If you have any old ones eliminated.
I understand that, but I'm just saying, the way this is set up, if you're the bureaucrat sitting there and making the decisions on what regulation to add, is going to say I got to get rid of two at the same time. Maybe if you can't get two at the same time, then you can't add a new one. Well, yeah, status quo. It's better to stay where we are than get even worse than we are.
But the whole point is not an ideal, but we can't stay where we're at.
Well, I get that. I'm not arguing that this is the way it should be. I'm arguing that there is a strong probability that this is the way it's going to work out. You know, we get two cancel, two for every new one. Okay, fine, but it's not going to be as easy as some people suppose, and the bureaucrat responsible is not likely to cancel two and get his head handed to him in order to add one. Just say, you know, tack with it. We'll keep what we got, and we'll go from there. I mean, they've got more laws to enforce than they can imagine, and they can carry. It's like gun laws. They allegedly have. I have I don't know a proper number. I'm only guessing. But they allegedly have, I think I've heard, a couple hundred different laws governing the use of firearms. All right, do we really need another one? I mean, don't we have enough laws already?
And they don't There's enforce, a point and they don't enforce the ones that are on the books.
Yeah, I know. That's part of the deal. They don't enforce the ones that... Well, I don't think guns are a problem. I don't think enforcing gun laws. I think the problem is...
Depends on... You know, I can't pick one out right now, but...
Well, regardless, I'm just saying they've got so many laws, as you pointed out, they don't even enforce them. Nobody even knows what they are. They keep handing these things out as if they're party favors. Somebody's got to be a little more responsible about this. It can't. Hey, I got an idea. Why don't we change the law? Can't be that. Can't have a new regulation every time you get a wild hair. You've got to actually have some responsibility, and maybe this will help to make that happen. It's not going to be a perfect situation, but it couldn't be. I mean, this is politics. There's a bunch of people involved in all of this. Congress and the Senate and the courts and everybody's going to want to get their 2 cents in there, which means Trump is not going to get everything he wanted, but he wants a bunch of good things. He was talking, for example, he wants to stop drugs from pouring into the country. He's going to amp up the drug war. He said we can't allow a beachhead of terrorism to form inside America. I think that he didn't say so, but I believe he's talking about the Muslims. His economic team is developing historic tax reform that will reduce the tax rate on our companies. Okay, taxes on corporations are going down so they can compete and thrive anywhere with anyone. At the same time, we will provide massive tax relief to the middle class. Now, all right, we're going to have massive tax relief to the middle class, and we're going to have massive tax relief, reduced tax rates on our companies, and we're going to have $1 trillion on going to infrastructure. Where's this money coming from? All right? You can't have tax relief across the board for everybody at the same... I'm not saying you can't absolutely, but a certain amount of this is optimistic to the point of being a little bit fantastic. Trump has some ideas. He's talking about foreign companies ship their products into America. We charge them almost nothing. I don't doubt he's going to try to fund his project to some degree with tariffs on foreign-made products. If that's possible, and I think it is, I think he'll try to do that. But it's still, he's got problems. He's got as much problem facing him in the White House right now as probably anybody's ever had when they took office, with the exception of maybe Harry Truman took office, I think, when World War II was yet to be concluded. It was all going our way, but he took office. Franklin Delano Roosevelt died, and Harry Truman came. But Trump has trouble facing him, and it's not going to be easily overcome. And if he can overcome that trouble, he's going to be one of the great presidents in American history. We're going to take a break, a couple commercials, be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every...
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well,
Should we do a little more Trump?
I think we can finish up, yes.
All right, here's another one. He wants merit-based immigration system. This makes perfect sense. And the idea, he says, the basic principle for those seeking to enter this country is that they ought to be able to support themselves financially, yet in America we don't enforce this rule, straining the very public resources that our poorest citizens rely on. In other words, we're providing welfare for people that are coming into this country. As soon as they get here, they've got to actually have a way to support themselves. And he's pointing out that most nations like Canada, Australia, and many others, they have a merit-based immigration system, and one way or another, they aren't letting people in just to come in and sign up for welfare. If you're coming in, you better have something to offer. You don't have something to offer, you go ahead and stay at home. We don't need you down here. Good idea, right? It's a good idea. America spent approximately $6 trillion in the Middle East. This is Trump speaking. All the while, our infrastructure at home is crumbling. With $6 trillion, we could have rebuilt our country twice, maybe even three times, if we had people who had the ability to negotiate. Now, what's he telling us? He's telling us he's going to cut spending in the Middle East. That's one of the things he's saying here, or at least he's, to my mind, reading between the lines. He's not just talking. He's saying, look, we're not going to spend any more money in the Middle East. And if we're not there to enforce some kind of peace and stability, such as it is, it's hard to say who's going to step in and maintain peace and stability in the Middle East, if anyone, or if the Middle East is going to erupt. He wants to rebuild, he wants national rebuilding, wants a $1 trillion investment in the infrastructure. He's going to create millions of new jobs. The effort will be guided by two core principles, buy American and hire American. Okay, that's good, but where's the money coming from? Where are we going to get the money? You know? This is going to be interesting because as much Melody and I were talking during the commercial break, and it crossed my mind, we were talking about Trump talked in generalities, we're going to do these good deeds. We're going to help the veterans. We're going to house back the police. We're going to create more jobs. We're going to do a bunch of stuff. All right. We're going to rebuild the infrastructure. All right. All sounds good, but those are all generalizations. And they're the kind of thing that virtually everyone can agree with the objective. Say, oh, we're going to buy American and hire men. Okay, fine, great, sounds good. But they didn't talk about details. And I don't think it's an accident because the details are what make people mad. All right? Everybody listening say, oh, that sounds good. Yeah, that sounds really good. Yeah. Even some of the liberals and some of the Democrats had to agree that Trump sounded like he was going to do some good and rest, that sort of thing. He talked about an education bill that funds school choice for disadvantaged youth, including millions of African Americans and Latino children. There got to be a bunch of people in the left that said, well, that's, you know, I don't like the guy, but that sounds pretty good. But he didn't do details. And the details is what will make people mad. Because details are where we say, okay, we're going to fund this education bill. We're going to pass an education bill that funds school choice. Okay, But if we talk about the details, we're going to start talking about, as a result, public schools are going to be reduced in size. There are going to be less public school teachers, less administrators, less property taxes for the public schools.
Property taxes will never go down.
Well, maybe so, but something's going to. They won't. They'll get less of the money. Whoever gets it. And all I'm trying to illustrate, it's the details that make us mad. We all agree on the goals. But when they say, "Wait a second," in order to fund this, that, or the other, we're going to raise taxes on radio talk show hosts. At that point, I'm not going to be a Trump supporter. It's the details when I find out. Wait a second, that's my ox you're goring. That's when you object. The objectives, the generalization. Hooray for that. Details, that's what makes people angry. He still says he's going to repeal and replace Obamacare. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. And he says, we strongly support NATO, an alliance formed through the bonds of two world wars that dethroned fascism and a Cold War that defeated communism, but our partners must meet their financial obligations. We expect our partners, whether in NATO or the Middle East or the Pacific, to take direct and meaningful role in both strategic and military operations and pay their fair share of the cost. Well, what if they don't? All right, we're talking about Europe more than anything else. Trump may be talking about other sources that will help us in the Middle East or wherever. But when he's particularly talking about NATO, he's saying NATO's great. We really support NATO, but they got to pay their share. Well, they're not going to pay their share. I can't say that for an absolute fact, but they're probably not. Which to me, if Trump agrees that they're not going to pay their fair share, it's an implicit warning that Trump intends to back out of NATO. I don't mean that he plans to leave, but he plans to do less with NATO than has been true in the past. He's going to say, look, Europe, you need to, kick in. And they're going to say, sorry, we're broke. We got to take care of Greece. We can't afford NATO. We got Greece. That's our little cross to bear down. And Italy is coming, and maybe France and Portugal, or who knows where else. Spain, we got our own problems. Well, that means to me that he's going to back. I don't mean he's leaving, but he's going to reduce our participation in NATO. That's a hint. Now, he didn't say that, but I'm just saying I read it that way, and maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. What do you think, Melody?
Well, just a lot. I mean, he really didn't give away anything that any other address to Congress in the first year of the presidency of any president. I mean, he was, pretty much on target. Some say it was probably one of the best deliveries. And I agree. And I hope this country is ready for those changes. And,
well, I'll say one thing about that delivery. I assume he was using a teleprompter.
Mm-hmm.
Because he spoke for an hour, and he without any flubs that I was.
Although I talked to somebody today, and they started arguing with me. I says, "Well, he did a great job, and he did that all on his own, and blah blah blah." And I said, "Well, I know he probably had a teleprompter." "Oh no, he didn't." And he started arguing. I said, "Okay."
Even if he didn't have a teleprompter, there is still evidence that he rehearsed that speech a lot because he didn't flub. I didn't catch it. I didn't catch a play where he lost his place or he misread words or whatever. It was, you could believe he was delivering that without a teleprompter. And if he was, that is evidence that he really has, a good mind. It's hard to speak for an hour all by yourself.
Really, Al?
it takes
really, Al?
Listen, I know. try to maintain a sense of coherency for an hour. Most people can't do it for 5 minutes. And even if he had a teleprompter to keep him in line, essentially, he did a great job of just reading it and not fumbling it and becoming confused. And it's just evidence to me that he really prepared for this speech. It wasn't something that he just, I'll show up and read it off the teleprompter and it'll be fine. No, he worked hard at this. He wanted to do well. He wanted to do well at this, and it was important to him. Mm-hmm. And all by itself, that's interesting information to me, and it's the sort of thing he said.
I agree. But one of the scariest things that I read in the news today Oprah for president.
Yeah.
She's actually thinking about a run after in this next election.
She's essentially saying if they can elect Trump, he's never been a politician. Why not me?
Yeah. If people love her, you know what? She'd win.
I don't think so.
I do.
I don't.
People love her.
Some people love her.
I think she'd have a...
At the point in time...
Look what Hillary was able to do.
I know, but here's another guy. Ed Klein is absolute Newsmax. He says he's absolutely sure Hillary is running in 2020.
Yeah, she's too old.
Okay? It's like the ever-ready bunny or the mummy or something like that. Give them a couple of tanna leaves and they'll run again. I mean, oh my God. When does it end? I can't tell you how... I was practically terrified that she was going to win this last election, and now she's, 2020. Come on, Hillary. Come on, come on. I think it's BS.
It is.
I don't think she's planning.
She'd be too old. She'd be 73.
She'd be 73.
I mean, you know what? If she carried herself well through this election to where she looked good, and I'm just not talking about the videos that you saw online where she was falling over and so forth. I'm talking about when she made appearances and so forth. Her personal appearance... I mean, they're millionaires. I mean, her hair wasn't done.
Not
half
like
their
they
time.
Were. Their foundation has been gutted.
Well, let me finish. But you know, her hair was never properly done. She wears the dowdiest clothes that you can find for a million. So if she was a little more, in tune with her, presence and carried herself better, 73 wouldn't be an issue. But she can't carry age 73. She would never be able to carry it.
I don't think she's... I
she's
going to
look
doing
old
right
and haggard.
It says here in the interview, I was on the Steve Malzberg show, and I don't even know who Steve Malzberg is, but quote from Klein. Who is this guy, Klein? Ed Klein, best-selling conservative author, absolutely sure she's going to run. He says she's going to write a book for Simon & Schuster. She's going to do paid speeches, and then she's going to go on another listening tour. She's planning another listening tour. Well, I'll tell you what that tells me. I think she's saying, I'm running for president, so you should all come and buy my book. I think it's just a promotional device. Sell the book, get more speaking engagements
silly.
And the rest, that sort of thing. At the point in time when she admits she's not running for president, she and the Clintons, the whole Clinton family becomes irrelevant. They're a historical footnote. Right? But as long as, I'm going to run again. Well, then everybody's going to pay attention to her. She's going to get news coverage. She's going to get whatever. But at the point in time she admits she's finished, she is finished.
She can hang it up. She's done.
In any case,
stick a fork in her. She's done.
If you thought 2016 was an interesting election, wait till 2020 when we're going to have Oprah battling with Hillary for the Democratic nomination. Now that is going to be a show. That is going to be something worth seeing. And I don't think it's going to happen, of course.
No, it's not.
But nevertheless, it's interesting to hear consider the possibility.
Only in America, anyway. But I don't think Trump will. I think he's setting up Pence, I think he's setting up Pence to take the place. I really don't see him doing it 8 years. I believe that he thinks he can what he wants to accomplish. I think he thinks he can do it in 4 years.
I think he can do it, and I think he thinks he can do it in 90
two.
Days.
Yeah, probably.
He's going to retire.
Well, reality,
I've done everything I can. I'm going to retire now.
The point
now.
Is, I'm talking about the complete term. So I think everything he wants to do, he'll have it done in 4 years, and I think he's setting Pence up. And I think that's why I was a little surprised when he sent Pence off to meet with some, European leaders or something like that. I thought, I wonder why Trump didn't go. So it's just...
Trump's security must be concerned about him. There have been so many threats and so much anger about Trump being elected that I don't think they're going to send him down to McDonald's without helicopters and everything else to provide security for him. I think there's more concern than they had for Obama or usual presidents. And that may calm down after a few months and rest, but not a good idea maybe to send him over to Europe. It's just maybe a risk that they don't want to face at this time.
Perhaps. perhaps.
Got one more item here before we run completely out of time. And the headline, this is from Ms. Shedlock, and he said, March rate hike odds surge to 80%.
Yep.
New standard for surprisingly strong economy. Well, we're not going to get to the surprisingly strong economy, but what they're saying is that the odds that the Federal Reserve will increase the interest rate this month have now surged to 80%. Mm-hmm. Odds makers or whatever, bookies and whatever, they say, oh, 80% are running. What do you think, Melody? Are they going to raise the interest rates this month?
I think they very well could. And they're shifting away from lingering over these decisions. And you have a lot of the presidents are out there, you know, doing the stump, talking about raising rates and so forth. And there really isn't any reason. I know the jobs report, I think it doesn't come out tomorrow or Friday. I think for some reason it's next week, maybe because February is just a short month. So if that's still strong, I can't imagine why they wouldn't increase it.
It's almost that point, isn't it? Where it's almost hard. What is the reason not to increase?
What is the reason not to?
I mean, for the moment, at least, the Dow Jones is hitting record highs. How much longer that's going to last remains to be seen. But given that evidence, it's going to be hard. If they don't increase it, it's an evidence that they don't think the economy is strong.
Although there was a report out late yesterday afternoon where consumer spending cooled in January. As automobiles and utilities fell, inflation recorded its biggest monthly increase in 4 years. So,
Melody. We're not concerned with reality. We're talking about appearance.
That's all raising the probability of an interest rate hike. So
we can expect to see an interest rate hike this month. We're gonna have to go now. We are out of time. Want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my